Favorite Band Podcast, the podcast where we talk to your favorite bands about how your favorite bands became your favorite bands. My name is Brandon. I'm with my good friend Dave. Before I invite Dave, hold on. I want to talk to you real quick. Just remind you to please go and subscribe and to review us on iTunes. It's super helpful. Right now, we've got, I think, like 17 reviews or something like that. We get them sporadically. If you guys could go this week and just give us a little review, let us know. If you're one of the people that listen to us on a regular basis and you have not reviewed us, please review us. Secondly, last week, I believe, we posted for some of your requests for bands. We love that. It's actually super helpful in helping us know what direction to go, what people to reach out to, because there's so many bands, it's hard to know who to reach out to unless you're doing it blindly. And so please do that. We've reached out to many of the bands that you've requested, but you can continue to do that. You can find us on Instagram or Twitter or on Facebook, or you could email us at yourfavoritebandpodcast@gmail.com. And finally, today is a little bit different. We're actually interviewing somebody from The Tonight Show, Jimmy Fallon. The reason being is one of the things we want to do is to kind of branch out just a little bit, talk to people who are in some way, shape, or form involved in pop culture, but have used music in what they do. There's no one else, I think, that does it better than Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy uses his platform as a comedian, but merges it so well with music so many times, almost every night, it seems like. And so we decided, let's start with Jimmy. And so we got an amazing showrunner. But first,
Dave, listen, I'm excited. I know you're excited. This is a totally new world for us. Not really. It's just a different world, which is another way of saying a new world. Dave, hi.
Hey, bud. How's it going?
I'm doing great. Tell me about how excited you are.
On a scale of?
1 to 15.
Let's go with a freshman at 15 years old.
Perfect. I love it. Nice one. This is a little bit different. We're going to get straight to it. We have Mike DeCenzo. I said it wrong, didn't I? Mike.
That's right.
God, yeah, I did it. you're a showrunner of sorts of The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. I don't know what that means. Usually we talk to bands. Have you ever been in a band?
I actually have not been in a band.
Okay, well, you're like in a band of comedy, which is a musical art form all of its own. I'm having a hard time. I think I'm so flustered with how hard Skype was that now it's happening. Mike, tell us a little bit about you. You've been with Jimmy Fallon for a long time, back to Late Night. So talk a little bit about how you ended up getting that job and kind of your past with comedy.
Yeah. So I've been with Jimmy for over 8 years. I was one of the first writers hired at Late Night I was hired in 2008. Show started in 2009. So before that I was at The Onion for a few years. That was really the extent of my comedy background, besides doing, you know, comedy sketches and stuff in college and stuff. But just applied for the job and, you know, met with Jimmy. Luckily they liked my stuff and, you know, it just clicked. So yeah, I've been with him for that long. He's the best. And, you know, obviously the musical stuff has been a huge part of his show and his life and his comedy and therefore in my life too, which I couldn't be happier about. It's awesome.
Right. And that is what we're going to talk. That's kind of how we're making this actually happen, because we're going to talk about the musical stuff. Cause like, I feel like every night there's some sort of musical influence. But before we dive into some of those sketches and talk about how they kind of came to be, I am interested. A lot of people watch The Tonight Show on a regular basis and have no idea the work that goes into making a show nightly, a comedy show based on what's going on in the world. So talk a little bit about what it's like to write night in and night out and to create a show.
Yeah, it's insane.
I imagine.
It's we have a staff and crew of like 200 people, and they're all the most talented people in their respective fields. And the show could not go on without them, obviously without Jimmy and all the talent he brings to the table, but also, you know, it's like, if you're going to do a sketch that involves wardrobe, graphics, props, a set, wigs, fake mustaches, any of that, we just have the best team of people who are just, they don't say no to anything. And so any crazy thing that Jimmy or us dream up is made into reality, which is a pretty awesome thing, and I don't take for granted. None of us do, because it's, that's not how it in the real world. If you have an idea, it's just an idea. Here, right. You have an idea, and the next day, you know, Jimmy is dressed as James Taylor from the 70s, singing with James Taylor from the 70s on a seesaw, and
right.
It's being shot beautifully by our director, and it's just, you know, it's just amazing. So it is a lot of work writing jokes and writing sketches, and, you know, we have segment producers that produce these great interviews, and we have music bookers that book great music, and we have people who create sets and lighting for all these bands that come on. So it's really it's an insane team effort. And if you took one Jenga piece out of the whole thing would collapse. So it's a total team effort.
200 is a lot. That's insane.
It's a lot of people. It's insane.
So cool. Before Dave dives into the first question about sketches, I do want to share a quick story. I was a teacher for 3 years, and I taught middle school.
Nice.
And on Fridays, we had homeroom every day, which was just like a study hall period. And on Fridays, I'd play a game with them. And the best game, it was the best we ever did. I played Name That Guy.
All right, let's name that guy.
And they thought it was, like, they hated it. But it made me so happy because they had no idea what that was. And they would get so pissed off at me because they were like, how are we supposed to know these guys? And clearly it was over their heads, but it made me really happy. So thank you for having the audacity to put that very stupid game
on television. Did you know that was my bit?
No, I didn't. And I'm really happy. Dude, I don't think I can say with enough kindness and enough, like, I love it, and I wish it was a real game show.
That was, you know, back in the late night days. But that was one of my favorite ones to do, because it was nonsense, and the, you know, it was just, you know, here's a stock photo of a guy, what's his first and last name, and it was just always hilarious to see people attempt to guess this like it was a real thing. It was so fun.
Yeah, I know you guys have kind of moved past that and the carpet samples since you've gone to Tonight, but
that was mine too. Wheel of carpet samples.
Please, just bring them back. That's what I want. Dave,
for brand's sake.
Yeah, man. Wow. Thank you. That's a blast from the past to hear about those.
Snively. Jacob Mink, Shannon Happy Jackson, Gerard Kipley, Baxter Flapp, Pete Howell Jr., Randy Basket.
One of the first skits that I remember from the late night was the Balls in Your Mouth song, which has been done so many times now from so many different people that can't even remember like what the first one was. But that was based on the original, was based on the BP spill in 2010 when you guys decided to do that song. So can you talk about how that, like, it's such a specific thing. How did that come to be? And like, how does the inspiration in general for a song like that?
That was May, I believe, of 2010, and that was a weird one because we were doing this week called Watch Jimmy with Jimmy, where we were not all the staff, but you know, a lot of the writers and staff members were staying until 1:30 in the morning at the office, and we were live streaming Jimmy and the writers and some of the Roots, etc., watching the show.
Yeah, I remember
as it happened. So what happened was, you know, to our former producer Gavin Purcell, who was like an internet genius, he was like, "Oh, a good way to like engage with people is to have people tweet in song ideas." And me and Gerard, who I've written a lot of the musical bits with, he was like, "You guys take one of the titles and write it up." So someone suggested, like, "You should write a song about the BP oil spill." So we were just like, you know, we were delirious. It was like we were spending the entire week just basically in the office. So we were just like, you know, fucking around in the conference room with a guitar, and it somehow balls in your mouth, tar balls in your mouth came about. And we were laughing about it, and Jimmy sang it on that Watch Jimmy with Jimmy thing, and then people loved it there, so we were like, hey, let's try it on the show. So we did it on the show, and then, man, we got so much mileage out of that, because the oil spill went on forever, and we were just like, hey, let's...
Right.
Anytime we couldn't think of anything to do, we were like, let's do Balls in Your Mouth again. And then we eventually did it with, like, Eddie Vedder, Florence Welch, Brad Paisley, I think Russell Crowe did it. It got to the point where even, like, years later, we were, like, just Googling tar balls. We'd Google tar balls, be like, oh, my God, they just spotted one tar ball off the Gulf Coast. Let's bring it back. Balls in your mouth. But it really is probably one of the catchier songs that I've ever written, for sure.
There's another one I feel like that came out right around that time, and I for the life of me I can't remember the actual line, so I haven't been able to find it. But something about something with a giraffe's body or something like that.
Oh yeah, exactly what that is. That was it was the same thing. Me and Gerard, we were loopy, and it was a song that started about Tiger Woods. He was coming back. He was doing his first tournament since the whatever scandal thing.
The incident.
So then we started this song about Tiger Woods, and then it became a song about what his favorite animal was. I believe it was like, Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods, you're a very fantastic golfer. It's funny that your name is Tiger, because that's my third favorite animal.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then it would go into, number two is giraffe or something. Or no, number one, number two is a cheetah. It runs real fast and jumps so high, but number one on the list is giraffe. Now here's why. They got long, long necks. They got long, long necks. They got long, long necks. Can you imagine having a neck that long? Sometimes it's like a slide. Gonna slide on down, down that neck. Slide on down to Happy Town. It's like a tree growing out of your body. It's like a tree growing out of your body. I can't believe I still remember fucking line to that thing. But that was we literally wrote that in the amount of time it takes to sing it. It was just stream of conscious.
Right. And one of the things... I feel like I know this about you. This is a weird thing to say because I don't really know you that well. But I feel like I'm not going to say I have a style of comedy because that would be a lie. But the things I like about comedy are when things go on way too long, like the skit with Obama's face is, and he's thinking about something, and it like keeps going.
Hey, that was mine too. You got me, man. Obama
That's
expressions.
What I feel.
Yeah.
That's what I feel about that skit, like the giraffe thing. Because it's like, why is this song still going? And then by the end, you're like, yep. That's
and why was it remotely about Tiger Woods in the beginning?
Right. That's right.
Yeah, long, long necks. They got long, long necks.
Yeah. It's like a tree growing out of your body. That was Gerard's line. It's like a tree growing out of your body.
Because it is.
For giraffes,
forward,
especially.
Yeah. Seriously. One of the things you guys do really well is get like these just legends to like play with these stupid things. Like one of the first ones I remember is Paul McCartney and that Yesterday, and they did like a scrambled eggs thing. And I remember watching that just being like I was loving it, but also I was pissed because Jimmy's getting to do this with Paul McCartney. So talk a little bit about the creation of what it's like to pitch an idea like that to somebody like Paul freaking McCartney.
Yeah, that one was a crazy one. It was, you know, it was pretty early on in our run too, and that was, I just had the idea based on like that legend of, you know, Yesterday's original title being Scrambled Eggs, because to remember the melody. Yeah. The placeholder lyrics were scrambled eggs, oh my baby, how I love your legs. So my idea was like, what if that song was kept going like that? So I wrote the whole thing. Gerard helped out a little bit with some lines, and I sent it to Jimmy, and he was like, oh shit, I love that. If Paul doesn't do it, I'll do it myself. And so I guess he went up and pitched it to Paul, who was hosting SNL, I believe, or musical guest, and he like pitching the idea, apparently. This is according to Jimmy, I wasn't there. But he pitched in the idea, and Paul was like, no, it's all right. I think I'll just talk. And then Jimmy was like, all right, well, just so you know, this is how it goes. And Jimmy, like, started playing it on guitar. And then, as he put it, before he knew it, Paul was, like, looking over his shoulder, reading the lyrics with him. And he was like, all right, I'll do it if you do it with me. And so they did it together. And, man, that was definitely one of the best days of my life. I was like, I can't believe I wrote something that a Beatle is singing.
Yeah, that's unreal. I didn't even think about that.
It's just insane
to say that alone is crazy.
But the best part is that since the first two lines were technically a Lennon McCartney creation, on the album that we put out, me and Gerard have co-writing credits with Lennon and McCartney.
There it is.
Shoot.
The liner, if you look at the liner notes to blow your pants off, it says scrambled eggs, parody lyrics by Lennon, McCartney, Bradford, DeCenzo.
I love that.
Wow. Also, I don't even know, I have no idea how I never picked up before that was how that came up, because I knew the thing that about the scrambled eggs, I just didn't even connect the two things. That makes so much more sense now.
That's awesome.
Oh, my baby, how I love your legs. Not as much as I love scrambled eggs. Oh, let's go get some scrambled eggs.
Do you have a Grammy, right?
I do. Yeah, that's partly from that, partly from Balls in Your Mouth. It's insane. Definitely. Going into TV, I would have thought, like, hey, maybe I'll get an Emmy someday. Never would have thought a Grammy. And now I think I probably will never get an Emmy, but I got the Grammy, so I got the hardware.
That's right.
So kind of going off the fact that Jimmy's kind of like likes doing these songs, he's obviously really good at impressions. So can you talk about like how he decides where to go with that? I mean, Neil Young is one of the first ones I remember seeing. Where you did the Fresh Prince theme, and again with Bob Dylan doing the Hot Light Bling. So can you talk about those skits and how he decides, like, whether he can do an impression or what to do with it?
Yeah, he's so talented, and I feel like one, you know, he was just walking around the office one day singing something as Neil Young, and I was like, oh, he should do the Fresh Prince theme as Neil Young. And I pitched it, and he, you know, he sat down with the guitar and, like, basically immediately had exactly what aired, because he's that talented.
Yeah. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool. Shooting some b-ball outside of the school. A couple guys that were up to no good started making trouble in my neighborhood. In my neighborhood.
And then the Bob Dylan one, I was like, I thought of it was Charles in Charge that we did first. And,
oh, yeah.
And so I love Bob Dylan. He's my number one favorite artist of all time. And so I think I recorded myself doing that, and I sent it to Jimmy. And I was like, I don't even know if you have a Bob Dylan impression, but I don't know if this is anything. And he was like, oh, I love that. And of course he had like a fucking great Bob Dylan impression that I'd never seen, but
Charles in charge of our days and our nights. Charles in charge of our wrongs and our rights. Charles in charge of our days and our nights. Charles in charge of our wrongs and our rights.
It's fantastic, and it's as close as I'll ever get to hearing like circa 1965 Bob Dylan sing a song. So
that was
amazing. And but like I also have to give credit to like our director Dave Diametti, who like made it look exactly like the Don't Look Back documentary, and then with the Hotline Bling one that we did like a year and a half ago, look exactly like Rolling Thunder review Bob Dylan, and our wardrobe people and wigs and hair and makeup, like they're so amazing at making it look like that. Like the first time he did Neil Young, like because he had the outfit and the hat and the way it was shot and the shadows covered his eye, there was actually a few actual news sources. I think the Hollywood Reporter even at first reported it as the real Neil Young appearing on the show and singing the Fresh Prince, and they're like, where did this come from? It's like, and then they eventually corrected themselves, but it's like, no, well, Neil Young isn't, you know, 30 years old anymore. He's whatever, he's 65 or 70. But it's amazing that they even thought that that was the real Neil Young. The impression is that good. In Neil Young's biography and autobiography, in fact, he says that he wants Jimmy to just start going on tour as him.
That's so funny. That's a definitely a career if, you know, if comedy doesn't work out. So like the Neil thing obviously kind of has taken on a life of its own, and he's been able to do things as Neil with Bruce Springsteen and also with Neil himself, which is really funny. So talk a little bit. We talked a little bit about what it was like to pitch that to McCartney, but with guys like The Boss and Neil Young, is it easy kind of to convince them now that it's been around for so long, the show, and kind of they see what it's like to do these type of things? Are they on board easily?
I think especially at this point, yeah, they're all on board and they trust Jimmy because, you know, they've seen the stuff that we've done and they know that we do it right and we do it with respect and with, you know, pinpoint precision in terms of getting it right and doing it. It's more of an homage even than a parody, you know. It's just like, oh my god, that's a new Bob Dylan song. It's not like, oh, that's a funny silly parody of Bob Dylan. It's like, no, that's a Bob Dylan song. So I think people see that we always try to make the guests look good. But Bruce doing a 70s version of himself with Neil Young was probably the one that really, he was kind of one of the first ones to do it, to take that leap. He was like, yeah, let's do it. You know, we did Whip My Hair with him, and then his manager like called Jimmy and was like, hey, what if instead of like current day Bruce, he also dresses up as 70s Bruce since Neil's doing 70s Neil. And so we like, he brought like sunglasses from the Born to Run tour, and he was like, I just need like the floppy hat, and then we got the beard and the wig, and that was just crazy. Damn. That was a surreal moment for me because like I was standing in for Bruce during rehearsal with Jimmy, and then so like he came out in full attire, and our stage manager was like, well, we're gonna do one run through with Mike just so you see like when you enter and stuff. So like I was there doing basically a Bruce Springsteen impression in front of Bruce. He was standing like 3 feet away from me, and so I was standing there like whip my hair back and forth, and he came, like after, I remember afterwards he like patted me on the shoulder. He's like, that's pretty good, which is probably one of the,
that's all you can ask,
definitely
for
one of the top five moments.
He invited you to be a part of the E Street Band after that, right?
No, not quite, but...
And that's when in his documentary he says that he wants you to go touring as well later.
Yeah.
I picked out my predecessor.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about two Neil Youngs on a tree stump, because, you know, why not?
That was... well, I feel like you have to start almost at the logical point, which is the first time they appeared together was them doing Old Man together, which was Jimmy's idea. Basically, since we did the first Neil Young, he was like, I really want to sing Old Man with Neil Young, two Neil Youngs. Basically, you have the younger version as Jimmy and the older version as Neil himself, and that was that almost like made me cry because it was like such a beautiful moment. Like when he like looks at him, like, "Oh man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were." And then he like looks at, I almost like teared up. And so that happened, and we did. And then Jimmy had an idea last summer that was, you know, Neil was in town, and you know, all of Neil Young's stuff. His main message now is about, like, you know, environmentalism and saving the planet and stuff. So he came up with the two Neil Youngs on a tree stump thing, and he just started singing it like, "Two Neil Youngs on a tree stump." And so I took it and I wrote the rest of it, me and Gerard, and we sent a video of it to Neil Young, and you know, I guess he liked it because he came and he did it.
One guy sitting on a tree stump, sitting all alone in the noonday sun, looking for the shade of yesterday, but it's all gone.
But that was crazy. Our art department, Kelly Hansen, she built a rotating tree stump for that bit, which is insane. That, and it was like, yeah, it looked like almost like Rainforest Cafe meets like Lord of the Rings or something,
or like Kermit the Frog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it was just like, but I thought it was a, you know, it's what I, those are the bits I love best, because like they're funny and they're weird, but also like they almost kind of are like, the songs awesome. Almost kind of make sense. Like,
yeah,
sitting on a tree stump. I know I had like, Jimmy had the line that was like, like Neil Young saying like, "I came from the future back to the past to warn your ass." Yeah. So it's almost like, you know, he's like coming from the future, where all the deforestation and stuff has happened. He's warning him, can't keep cutting down trees. And I had a...
like future Spock.
Yeah. And I had a line in there that was like, "The leaves on the trees had to leave, and the air that we breathe is gone." I was like, damn, that's not a bad line.
Yeah, that could be like a straight up actual lyric from then, because that's what they were singing about then too. Yeah,
that's what I love about Jimmy, is like sometimes he's like, you know, he obviously always wants it to be funny first, but then he's, if it can be funny, he's like, hey, well, can we also make it like a great Neil Young song? Right. It's not like over the top parody or anything like that. It's like, let's just make this a kick ass actual Neil Young song. That's what I loved about it, you know.
It's awesome.
And I feel like it's a good thing that you are doing what you're doing and not me, because when I say make a rotating tree stump forest thing and they do it, I would be like, well, now what can I do? I feel like opportunities are endless. So I would just give them the weirdest stuff. So,
well, that's actually what they love. They love doing, they love the challenges. That's what's so great about our show and our staff. Like, I feel like they love that. They love getting like weird challenges, because they like, they always rise up and make it happen. It's awesome.
It's like the Mythbusters. They're like, somebody request something awesome so we can go do the thing.
Exactly. On camera. Exactly.
And also, it's like on Spinal Tap. Have you guys ever had a moment where like you make a request and then when they come with it, it was like off by a measurement than what you were expecting?
Like in a movie where they like
try and make the Stonehenge, and he's like, "I said feet, not inches."
I mean, fortunately, our people are pretty awesome, but yeah.
If you said inches, they'd be like, "He means feet." So one of the, speaking of kind of silly things that are just silly for the sake of silly, one of the like funniest skits is the clucking song, which is just a group of people in chicken costumes clucking to a popular song. How did that like make it into, like, how did the process go of pitching that and then it actually coming to fruition?
The beauty of that one is that that was our editor at the time. He's now our director. His name is Chris Tartaro. He's hilarious. And he would always be clucking stuff in his office. You know, he's just a funny dude. And he would do that. And then it's like, finally, we all put it together. And I think, you know, him and maybe John Haskell pitched doing that with like Jimmy. And then I was like, well, let's also try to add some guests to it. And I think in the first one, it was Jimmy, him, Nick Offerman and Blake Shelton, and they were the Chickeneers, a la the Lumineers, doing Ho Hey and just clucking it. And it was just, it's just so purely funny, and it's just like, yeah, just four dudes in a chicken outfit clucking a song. It's so stupid, but it makes me laugh.
Right, and even who it is makes it more funny. When you see like someone like Blake Shelton and Nick Offerman, they're such serious-looking dudes that really sells it.
And the best part is that then they do a reverse shot, and then you see that there are cue cards that just say balk, 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 balk. That's my favorite shot.
Another a classic is Slow Jamming the News. That's been around for a while. You do it with different guys. And my favorite is the one with Obama, obviously, just because it's like, the president is slow jamming the news. So talk about the idea of slow jamming the news, but then also what it was like writing a skit for the president.
Yeah, so that was honestly before we became a show. There was like, you know, a few of us writers, probably just me, Gerard, Amy Ozels, Bashir and Diallo, and our producer Gavin Purcell, who back before a show existed brought up the idea of slow jamming the news. And then we ended up doing it on our first ever episode of Late Night. And that was a bit written by Bashir and Diallo. And then they, you know, they were great writers, and they wrote all the slow jams up until they left. And they did one, the first time we did one with Obama back in 2012, when we went to North Carolina. And then me and Gerard were sort of took over the mantle of that bit after they left. So the most recent one we did with Obama, which was sort of as his term was wrapping up last June, we got to write that, and that was just, it's amazing. It's amazing to get to write words that the president says, you know, similarly to, it's like, he's like the Beatles of a politician, yeah. Exactly. The president and Paul McCartney, not bad people to say things that you wrote down.
I mean, there's not much past that unless you can get like aliens or something.
I know, Bob Dylan would be my ultimate, but.
That's true, that's true. Got to keep your goals.
You have to have a goal. But no, that was awesome. And honestly, like, the jokes were great to write also, but also we wrote one line for him that was, like, one of his straight lines that I really loved, and it was, you know, he said, like,
climate change is real, healthcare is affordable, and love is love.
And I was like, damn, for a second I was a speechwriter for Obama.
Yes.
That's right.
That is so awesome.
The best part was backstage. He is like him and Michelle also, who we've worked with on sketches. They are the coolest.
So good.
They are the coolest people, and funny and nice, and like, so we filmed a rehearsal of that slow jam where I was standing in for Obama, basically. So I was doing his lines. And so backstage, when he arrived, we're me, Jimmy, and Gerard are showing him, and Tariq are showing him the iPad with the sketch on it, just so he could see, watch it. And he's so quick, he just picks it up. And so what you saw when he did on air, that was with zero rehearsal. That's his first take. He's that good.
Wow.
But the best, my favorite part was, so like, I'm standing there with the President of the United States, and he's watching me play him. And I, like, walk out, and I say, you know, Jimmy says, like, slow jam the news or whatever, and I walk out, and I say, I'm Barack Obama, and I, too, would like to slow jam the news. And he looks at me and goes, oh, very, very charismatic. Just totally burns me, like, because it was a very boring read. Like, and so to be burned by the president is pretty awesome. And then the other awesome part was when we showed him, like, the part where Tariq starts singing Work by Rihanna. It was like, we got to put Americans back to, and then Tariq sings like Work, 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 which was, you know, that was the big song at the time. And like, my version of Obama said, like, in a very sort of, you know, stiff way, like, Work, 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 Work. And then the president looks at me. He's like, "Well, why do you got to make me all seem all nerdy? No, I could do my Drake dance. I could do my Drake dance." And he starts like doing like a dance. There's a photo. Man. Like there's a photo of that moment, and we're all laughing so hard because it's the president referencing Drake and doing like a silly dance. Man, he was. That was just, you know, that's the best day you could ask for. I mean, he was awesome.
That's Jeez. So good. And I'm really excited for the Slow Jam the News with President Trump for different reasons. I'm sure that'd be really fun.
Oh, gosh.
America's best days are still yet to come.
Thank you, Mr. President, for all that you've done.
We slow jam the news.
Oh, yeah.
Give it up for the president of the United States, Barack Obama.
Okay, so some of these are so hard to move away from because they're just alone worth doing a whole discussion about. But so you kind of mentioned how kind of mundanely some of the ideas have come to you guys. Just like, here's an idea I had. So here's one. What if Tim Tebow and David Bowie are the same person? Does that just come from like the wordplay of T-Bowie?
It really did. It was at the height of Tebow mania.
Yeah.
And yeah. One of our great writers, Patrick Borelli, said T-Bowie. And we were all like, well, that's funny, but what is that? Whatever.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then Jimmy was like, oh no, I like T-Bowie. Let's do T-Bowie. And so me and Gerard were sort of asked to write T-Bowie without any sort of idea of what it is. And I was like, well, we should probably parody an existing David Bowie song. And then that's when we came up with like the Tim Tebow to Jesus Christ. Like
so
him
good.
Sort
so
of
good.
Like his prayer, because that was his whole thing at the time. And then, obviously, Jimmy's David Bowie impression, our wardrobe department doing, like, a glam rock version of a Denver Broncos uniform. Just insane.
That was incredible. That was another one of the cases where the visual added even so much more.
Yeah, the way that was shot was just brilliant by our director, Dave. And, yeah, the wardrobe and the makeup, like, with that was just insane.
Jesus Christ to Tim Tebow, please leave me alone. Don't you know my day of rest is Sunday? And I'm sick of watching all these Broncos games.
I just have to say quickly that Tim Tebow is the best fucking person in the world. He was just on our show and he did,
yeah,
like, you know, he's been doing like all this, he does all this charity stuff and this, that thing he does, the night to shine for kids with special needs, like that, you know, that moment on our show is one of my favorite things that we've done in a while, because it's just, you know, it's just such a positive, good thing in this world that is so, if you look at the internet and cable news, et cetera, everything is just so negative and angry. And then you got this guy who's just doing this positive stuff and putting this positive stuff into the world. It's like, wow. And he was just so awesome. So,
yeah.
And he does it without, he doesn't seem like he has an agenda or he's pretentious about it. He just does it, which is so good.
So quick aside, as we joke about T. Bowie, I had to also plug the man himself, who is an awesome, awesome person. And he really liked the T. Bowie stuff, too. So that's it's all good.
And I love that you guys feel the freedom to do things sometimes that aren't funny, but are just like nice. Like, I feel like I was reading that New York Times article that came out about Fallon and kind of the stuff that's all happened after the Trump thing, and like his willingness to try to stay like not bashing Trump for the next 4 years. As somebody, like, I'm not a Trump fan, but as somebody who like likes to watch late night television, it's nice to know that there's at least one show I can watch that's not going to be all politics for the monologue, and not going to be all about like just continuing to to bash what's going on in our country, because it does suck. So it's nice to kind of escape.
It's very nice to hear, and that's what we try to do. Like, we'll always address politics in the monologue, because that is what the news is. But you know, after that, we try to just entertain and make people laugh. You know, try to be inclusive, and you know, that's what Jimmy is. That's who Jimmy is. That's who we are, and I love doing that. So I appreciate hearing that from you.
Yeah. Moving forward just a little bit to kind of a couple of the more viral things that you guys do, I guess. The Wheel of Musical Impressions, the Ariana Grande, I guess is her name. That has 90 million streams, which is crazy. And that's just on YouTube. I'm sure you guys have posted other places. So talk about that, game, I guess it is, and kind of how it came
to be. We did it first with Adam Levine, and we didn't think anything of it. We were just like, oh yeah, this is a fun thing to do. And then that one kind of got really big. And then when it really exploded was when, we had Christina Aguilera on. And so she was, she did the Britney thing, and that was because that was a last minute switch up. She was going to do Alanis Morissette, and she was in the Roots room, and we were rehearsing the song before we went out there. And she's like, yeah, I'm not really sure about my Alanis or whatever. And she was like, I can do Britney. I was like, oh,
say no more.
Yeah. And she was like, well, okay, but how would I do whatever song it was? I think, This Little Piggy. She was like, how would I do that? And I was just like, This Little Piggy. And she was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then she just nailed it.
I got it from here.
And then, after that, it was just like, and then Ariana came on and did, she did a Britney, and then she did her Christina Aguilera doing The Wheels on the Bus. And it was like, oh my, the thing I love about that bit is it shows like, oh, these people actually are super talented. It's not, they're not necessarily manufactured pop stars. And sometimes you don't even hear that talent in their actual music that's put out. It might sound a little overproduced, but man, when you hear them sing, Ariana, Demi Lovato, Alessia Cara came on and did it, and you're like, holy shit, these people are so... That's what I love about that bit, is always something just blows me away completely. I'm like, holy shit, this person is insanely talented.
Well, and the funny thing about the Ariana one is SNL basically did the same thing with her, but just in skit form.
Yeah.
It's just like, she's really good at it.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah, when they did the, like, the radio station's down, so you have to like do it now. You have to be every artist.
They did that, I don't blame them for.
And that, and in this case, do you guys come up with a bunch that you think that they might be able to do and see if they can do them, or do they send you some that you they're like, we I can do these?
It's sort of it's sort of a combination of that.
Gotcha.
Sometimes you see them online, like, oh, she sort of does that, and. Or sometimes we just ask them, like, hey, what do you have? And then we try to match it up with the best song. And then it's magical every time. It blows me away every time.
Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite things about it also is the choice of songs. It makes it that much more challenging. It's not just like, here's me doing them, doing their song. It's like, also, I'm going to pick a song that's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous that it makes it funny for like two reasons. One, that you would sing a song like that's serious. And then two, that you're doing the impression. So it's like a double combo.
Yeah,
double
combo. That's what I love.
I also love your commitment to the random button, as if that's actually random.
I know. I see people are always like getting in arguments on YouTube about it. And it's like, you know what? It's like, A, obviously it's not really random. It's a graphic that is built. And B, it's like, hey, it's, you know, it's television. It's part of the fun.
But the thing is that they're doing it no matter how it happens. So like, the part that's impressive is that they're doing it, not how it comes to be.
Yeah, it's part of the TV magic to see it land on one thing and then land on the other thing. And then it happens. It's great.
Oh,
Well, speaking of kind of like children's songs being serious, another viral video series that you guys do is the Classroom Instruments, where you like take just, I love those because it's so awesome to see that like when you get enough talented people, it literally does not matter what everybody has.
Yeah.
You can still make awesome music. And so you guys, I mean, obviously you have the roots, so there's not much better you can get. And so it's so awesome. So what's that like?
That's similarly mind blowing on the part of the roots. It's crazy that, cause those are actual, they're toys, you know, like,
yeah,
they're not like real instruments. They're actually children's toys. And like the way they make those songs sound is insane.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Like that's unbelievable. That we first did that with Call Me Maybe, and it was So it was at the height of that song, and Carly Rae Jepsen was coming on, and I was like, man, we should try to do something with that song because it's such a big song. And me and John Haskell were just brainstorming, and we were like, oh, maybe it's like they sing it with like tiny instruments, like a ukulele or something, and this. And they were like, oh, or like, yeah, like the kids' instruments, like when you're in a class, third grade classroom, and everyone gets like a wood block, a sand block, recorder. And you know, we had no, honestly, when we did that, that was going to be a web only thing that wasn't even going to air on the show. And then so we filmed it, and it was like, oh, that's really fun. And we put it online before it was aired on our show, and it was our biggest hit ever at the time. And we were like, that's awesome. Okay, let's put that in the show. And so that's when we started putting in the show.
How long do the roots have to work on it before
they've done that like 2 days in advance? Like
crazy.
They're that talented. They can,
what a fun thing.
They're just so talented. It's crazy.
What were you gonna say about Metallica?
Oh, I was gonna say that one surprised me because Jimmy was like, oh, you know, Metallica was coming on. He's like, let's do Enter Sandman. And a lot of times when we do like older songs, classic songs, it doesn't necessarily pop as much because it's not like what everyone's into right now. They're awesome to do, but that one fucking got 122 million views on Facebook.
Good.
It's
wow.
Fucking insane. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was super awesome and fun. I was like, I didn't realize, I guess like Metallica has like just a fucking worldwide fan base, and people just went crazy for it. So that was surprising but awesome. And I just love those videos because it's just pure joy. It's like, oh yeah. It's like, that reminds me of like being a kid and just banging on stupid instruments and singing at the top of your lungs. And yeah,
I also love to watch the roots. It's like some of the guys' faces in the background, like that just have like one thing to play every
that's
once in a while.
What I love about it, when we first did it, I was like, let's do one locked off shot. And I think someone else was like, no, we should stylize it and like do like close ups on the instruments and really make it into a cool edit package. And I was like, no, for some reason, I think just the one locked off shot, A, it's impressive because you know it's one take.
Mm-hmm.
And then B, I didn't realize at the time about it, but afterwards I was like, oh, all the roots are funny and they all do like their own funny thing. So then you kind of have to watch it like 12 times, and each time you kind of watch one person and see what they're doing the whole time, and it's really, really funny.
It's like Linus and Lucy, and you like watch each one of them doing their dance.
Yeah, exactly.
It reminds me of the Walk Off the Earth videos on YouTube. They're really popular with their like something similar to that, where they like will do songs, like popular songs, with like weird random instruments. And what makes it so good is the fact that watching it is so entertaining. It's not just the audio experience, but you're like watching the sound and watching the actual each noise come from whatever the thing is. It's such a satisfying feeling.
Yeah.
To see it, like, it's not processed at all. It's just like, there's that noise and there's that one. And like seeing not only where it's coming from, but the person playing it and their emotion about it. It's just like a full experience.
Or it's there's so cool. The tone that you can't figure out where it's coming from. And like you spend the whole video trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Just to kind of wrap it all up, let's talk a little bit about the bromance between Fallon and Timberlake. that bromance has created, I believe, 6 history of rap videos.
That's right.
Which I really enjoy as somebody who likes
things
like
that
old
are
school hip hop. No, like who likes old school hip hop more than I like today. Okay. So it's nice for me.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about how those came to be and also what it looks like to put together a mashup of hip hop songs that flow together so well.
When that started probably back in, I think, 2010, and that was Jimmy's idea, or Jimmy and Justin, I forget, but they came up with that. And the first 3 were written and sort of put together by Bashir and Diallo, who were just awesome. And yeah, it's just like mind blowing to see that, even from as a viewer. I remember the first one I saw them rehearsing it, and I was like, holy shit, this is going to be fucking huge. And I feel like Diallo was like, yeah, I don't know. I was like, no. I was like, dude, this is awesome. It's like, it was one of my first realizations where it's like, this isn't necessarily like a funny bit, but it's fucking awesome. And I love that. I love being able to do just awesome things. And I like that our show kind of embraces that. And so they fucking did a great job with the first 3. And then once they left, me and Gerard sort of took over that bit as well, similar to Slow Jam, and we did the next 3. And man, working with Jimmy A is a dream, and then adding Justin, like, they're so good together. Like all the choreography that you see when they're like doing these songs, like they have all these little choreographed moments. None of that is planned out. That bit doesn't have a choreographer. They just, as they rehearse it like once or twice, and they just naturally just figure that all out, and it's like perfectly in sync. Not to pun, yeah. Not intended. Not intended, but it really
you.
But it really
wow, that
is
was good. That's
yeah.
Good.
it really is crazy. Like they're so simpatico. It's like they just sort of know where the other one is moving. They know what the other one is singing. And yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, true romance.
It is, and like they're just 2 of the most talented people I've ever seen or worked with. But the first time that me and Gerard were doing a history of rap, I remember being like exhausted because we were like there. We decided like he was doing. Justin was doing a whole week on our show, and he was the musical guest every week, and he was doing a sketch in every show.
Wow.
And I remember like on Tuesday or Wednesday, they were like, you know what, let's do another history of rap on Friday. And so we had to sort of put one together that quickly. And
wow.
And we were like, oh man. So we were like at the office till like, you know, like midnight or 12:30, and we were like banging our heads, and we were like, all right, okay, we're putting it together. And I remember walking to the bathroom, and I looked down the hall, and Justin Timberlake is there in the hall with his dancers rehearsing his song for the next day. And I was like, oh fuck, this guy's the real deal. He's there at midnight, 12:30. So I can't complain about like long hours. He's Justin Timberlake, and he's still here fucking busting his ass, like just getting dance moves down for his musical performance on the next night's show. So that's when you know, similarly, like Jimmy goes home with the scratch track, and he's talked about like, you know, practicing it at home so much, like in front of his wife, that she was like, all right, enough with the history of rap.
That's so funny. And finally, this is maybe my favorite sketch. And I know you mentioned that you weren't necessarily the writer of this, but you were involved. The one where Jimmy and Justin are kids at camp, and they burst into song, and then AD busts in, and he does that voice that I love very much. Talk a little bit about how that sketch kind of, because it's such like a, so dumb and fantastic. So talk a little bit about what you know about the making of that one.
That, I mean, well, yeah, that one is, it's another one that's purely out of the brain of Jimmy, which honestly, a lot of our best stuff is purely out of his brain, which works unlike any other brain I've ever seen or worked with, where it's just like, he just sort of has these visions, which, you know, I'll just say he's the best, as a writer, he's the best person to work for, because he's just a machine in terms of coming up with characters and sketches and premises that are what I would call almost like a strange, beautiful, hilarious dream.
Yeah.
Two James Taylors on a seesaw, that type stuff, Neil Young on a tree stump. It's like, it ends up being like this beautiful mosaic, but also hilarious, but also like, man, this is just a weird, it's like watching a dream. So
that's a great point.
So the camp one, he was just like, yeah, I think like me and Justin were like kids at camp and we're singing Africa by Toto. Mm-hmm. And like the counselor keeps busting in. So it was written by John Haskell, and Jimmy's idea. And yeah, I remember working on that first one. That was, I think, also during that week where Justin did a sketch on every single episode. And yeah, he, you know, Miles was such a great actor too, as playing the camp counselor, Mr. Fletcher.
Very similar to the dad and the ooh.
There's actually a theory. I'll be the first to put it out in public, but there's a theory that since those sketches with Mr. Fletcher take place in the early 90s, there's a theory that his name is actually Gary Fletcher.
I love that.
And that in the future he ends up marrying Sarah's mother and becoming her stepdad, but that was his past. That they are the same person. He was a more angry, a younger, angrier.
Yeah, that's not a theory. That's fact. That definitely is what it is.
That's awesome.
We'll let the foul pals go crazy with that one. But
the foul pals.
But no, that sketch awesome. Is just awesome because it's just. It's just fun. It's just like actually reminds you of camp and being a kid and having a best friend. And they're like they walk in and like they're just instantly harmonizing. It's just insane. And then
that's great.
The other thing is that both of them, obviously, they can make any line just infinitely funnier just by they'll do a little tweak to it and just. Always fucking the example I'll give is that I think in the second or third one we did I Only Want to Be with You by Hootie and the Blowfish was the song that they were doing. And so they were, you know, there was a line in there where Jimmy's like, why don't we sing that song that we heard on the radio? And Justin's line was, oh, you mean Only Want to Be with You by Hootie and the Blowfish? But he delivered it as, oh, you mean Only Want to Be with You by Hootie and His Blowfish? And just that one word exchange, Hootie and His Blowfish, and he looks in the camera and kind of raises his eyebrows, and is like, oh, man, Justin Timberlake can just smile and get a bigger laugh than any of us can ever get with the funniest joke in the fucking world. It's both that's admirable and infuriating,
right.
But he's always hilarious. And then they always, anytime you see like those moments where they like shine a flashlight on Miles's crotch or spray water on him, that's all. We don't do that in rehearsal, and like we'll huddle with Jimmy and Justin like between rehearsal and be like, all right, so what are we gonna how are we gonna surprise Miles on this one and. They'll come up with something.
Yes.
So that's always, I love that because it's really spontaneous and a completely natural reaction from Miles when whatever they do happens. They're just, man, you can't ask for better people to work with than Jimmy and Justin.
I hear the drums echoing tonight, but she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. He's coming in 12:30 flight. Moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation.
Gonna take a lot to take me away from you. There's nothing that 100 men or more can ever do. I bless the brains down in Africa. Gonna take some time to do the things we never had.
What in the Pete sake's going on in here?
All right, so let's wrap this up with one last question. Of all these skits, what is your favorite skit you've ever come up with?
Wow. Talking about musical ones?
You had to just pick one.
Actually, for this, let's just do any skit you've ever...
Easily, well, non-music. I'll give you non-musical first. Easily, the Saved by the Bell reunion.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for that, by the way.
You're welcome. That's honestly, that's the best thing I've ever done. Best thing I'll ever do. And I've accepted that.
Hanging up on the wall. There it is.
I'm sure you aren't the one. Actually, I know you have 200 people on the staff. But I imagine the booking of all of them together was a pain. And so the fact that it actually happened is...
Weirdly, so like, well, you know, we started the campaign to reunite them back in the late night days in 2009. It was one of the first things we did, and at that point, yeah, that was impossible. But then when we were doing that show in LA for the Tonight Show, it was not they were all like game to do it, and they couldn't have been nicer. And it was literally, as someone who grew up watching Saved by the Bell, and I used to dream of being like one of the gang to be able to like work with them and like man, just see them like relive these characters and stuff and see them be actually enjoying it and seeing each other and having fun with it. That was easily the best, like, best day of my life. I was like, wow, that was awesome. The musically, man, there's been so many. Scrambled Eggs, obviously, because it's a Beatle.
Yeah
Obama thing because it's the president.
What a decision to have to make,
man. It's crazy. But one that we haven't mentioned that I'll just bring up because it was Jimmy's idea and I thought it's one of my favorite things we've ever done is the two James Taylors on a seesaw, which was just, I don't know how he thought of that. We were trying to brainstorm ideas for
it's so weird
him to do with James Taylor, and he's like, how about, like, two James Taylors on a seesaw? And we're like, what?
Who thinks of that?
Maybe he does dream them.
Maybe how, he's his dream.
Yeah, I don't know, but he was just like, like, I can't even describe it, but he started singing, like, the verse, like, I go up and you go down, and this whole world keeps spinning round. We're just two James Taylors on a seesaw. And I took it. I loved it so much. I went home and I wrote, over the weekend, I wrote the rest of the song. And my favorite thing is I came up with this one verse that I might be my favorite line I ever wrote, which is, what goes up must come down too. The seesaw changes our point of view. I will see what you just saw. We're just two James Taylors on a seesaw. And the line, I will see what you just saw, I was almost like, is that why it's called a seesaw? Like, I had to research, like, the etymology of seesaw, because I was like, damn, that line makes the whole thing make sense. And then we had people, like, tweet out, like, their thesis papers on the meaning of that song. And some people got pretty deep. And I was like, damn.
That's awesome.
It makes sense.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had that same thought when I saw it. So
that's just Jimmy being Jimmy and coming up with off the top of his head, as I said, funny, weird, and beautiful. If you watch that sketch, you get that. And man, that was so fun.
Yeah. What? One more for you. If what are a couple or maybe one skit that you've come up with that you loved and you were really excited to pitch it and then you pitched it and it got shot down or it just never came to be?
Oh, man. I don't really have that. That's the beauty of it. It's like, if it's good and I believe in it, usually I'm lucky enough that Jimmy believes in it too, and it happens. So it sounds like a cop out, but really it's been, you know, I couldn't ask for someone better to work for and work with than Jimmy Fallon.
That's great. Mike, thank you, my friend. This was so much fun.
Dude, thank you guys so much. Truly. This was a blast. And honestly, going even back to the Name That Guys and carpet samples, it was a blast reliving some of the old stuff. So thank you.
You got it. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Bye.
You go up while I go down, and this old world keeps spinning round. I get short and you get tall. We're just two James Taylors on a seesaw. I'm so high I touch the clouds. You're so low you touch the ground. From up here the world seems small. We're just two James Taylors on a seesaw. What goes up must come down too. The seesaw changes our point of view. I will see what you just saw. We're just two James Taylors on a seesaw. I go up and I say we. We is also you and me. Waving as we pass on by. Don't jump off, don't jump off, don't jump off. If you hurt me, you'll just hurt yourself. Where I've been, things I see, it's almost weird looking down at me. I am you, and you are me. I guess that's how it'll always be. Between us, we've seen it all. We're just two James Taylors on a seesaw.